A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. Apologies, I think I'm coming down with a cold, so if I sneeze a little bit, I'll do my best to try to edit that out, but it's been a heck of a morning, so fingers crossed we can get through this without too many interruptions. I am going guestless today, so you are the ones keeping me company. Yesterday was just kind of a crazy day, and I didn't have a chance to reach out, but we'll be back to our regularly scheduled interview programs coming up on tomorrow's program. And today we're going to be talking about an op-ed by New Mexico State Senator Crystal Brantley that ran in the Las Cruces Sun News. You know, we are getting close to the start of the 2026 legislative sessions. I know in Virginia, they're kicking off here, I believe, in a couple of weeks, maybe next week. Same is true for New Mexico. There are some state legislatures, you know, that operate on a year-round basis, so they're already in session. And, you know, I got to thinking, so we just saw in 2025, violent crime decline at record levels across the country, right? It very well could be that 2025 is going to go down as the year with the largest one-year decline in the national homicide rate. It is very likely that we're looking at the lowest homicide rate in 50 or 60 years. Many U.S. cities are reporting the lowest homicide rate in at least 60, 70 years, sometimes ever, right? So things are moving in the right direction, which theoretically would be bad news for the gun control lobby, right? Because when crime is going up, what do we hear from the gun controllers? We got to do something, right? We got to do something. Crime is out of control. There's an epidemic of gun violence. We got to do something. All right. Well, now shootings are at their lowest recorded levels in places like New York City. Shootings way down in Baltimore, Chicago. As well, by the way, as in cities in constitutional carry states like Alabama, Birmingham, for example. Mayor Randall Rudfin blamed permitless carry for a historic rise in homicides in 2024. And then when the homicide rate dropped dramatically in 2025 and permitless carry was still in the books, Randall Rudfin didn't really have any reason to any explanation for that other than, oh, I got these other programs that are working, right? So we know that when crime is on the increase, gun control advocates point to that as reason why we need to, you know, ban large capacity magazines or so-called assaultments or whatever it is that they want to impose, right? Waiting periods, limits on who can buy firearms, limits on how many firearms you can buy. We got to do something. Well, when violent crime drops, their message shifts a little bit. It then becomes we've got to do something, but we've got to do more, right? All of these achievements aren't good enough. Record level declines in violent crime. Yeah, so what? We need to do more, which is why we need to have all of these same things that we were talking about last year when crime was on the increase. Gun bans, magazine bans, waiting periods, red flag laws, all the rest. So, no, even though we are witnessing a historic decline in violent crime across the country, that's not going to stop the gun control lobby from pushing the same tired ideas that they push year in, year out, going after lawful gun owners, not violent criminals. And that is exactly what State Senator Crystal Brantley is talking about in her op-ed for the Las Cruces Sun News. As she writes, progressive lawmakers in Santa Fe have made clear that they intend to introduce legislation aimed at federally licensed firearms dealers, tightening training requirements, expanding licensing rules, and increasing regulatory pressure on small businesses that already operate under extensive state and federal oversight. And she writes, if history is any guide, New Mexicans can reasonably expect the return of another familiar proposal, an attempt to revive a quote-unquote assault weapons ban. Yeah, I'm really curious to see. I'm sure that one's going to be introduced, and gun owners in New Mexico should be paying attention to this. But, you know, New Mexico Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham has made this a priority the past two sessions, maybe the past three sessions. Got to have this gun ban. And so far, anyway, there has not been a ton of interest among Senate Democrats in New Mexico. Now, again, that could change at any moment. You know, 6 years ago, there was not interest among rural Virginia Democrats in passing a ban on so-called assault weapons. Now, one of the rural senators who opposed that measure 6 years ago is a sponsor of a ban on so-called assault weapons. So I am not suggesting that New Mexico gun owners get complacent, certainly not lackadaisical, but it is worth noting that Michelle Lujan Grisham has struggled to get her gun ban through the legislature over the past few sessions. She also wanted a 14-day waiting limit. The New Mexico legislature imposed a 7-day waiting period instead. That measure, by the way, struck down by the courts. New Mexico was in the process of appealing that decision. But so even when Michelle Lujan Grisham hasn't gotten everything she's wanted, what she's gotten has been bad enough that it's been able to be challenged in court. And unfortunately, that is likely to be the case this session as well. Senator Brantley, though, writes, at recent public safety hearings, the testimony about violent crime has been sobering and consistent. She said, police are making arrests, investigators are building cases, officers are doing their jobs, often under dangerous and demoralizing conditions. But weak statutes, loopholes, and policy choices too often turn those efforts into a revolving door. In other words, rather than focus on federally licensed firearms dealers imposing some sort of state licensing requirement on FFLs, instead of blaming lawful gun owners for violent crimes, look at what's actually happening in New Mexico in terms of violent crime. And what you see is a criminal justice system that is broken, particularly when it comes to juvenile justice. Brantley writes, that reality was laid bare this month in Las Cruces when Police Chief Jeremy Story presented evidence showing violent juvenile offenders openly bragging about the lack of consequences that they face. In messages and videos, these juveniles mocked the system, celebrated violence, and showcased their ability to obtain weapons, including federally regulated firearms such as Glock handguns, modified with illegal switches, despite repeated contact with the justice system. Some fired recklessly, others did so with deadly intent. The message from those offenders was unmistakable. They do not fear consequences because the system has taught them that there are none. And this is true not just in New Mexico, but honestly, throughout the country. And, you know, we've discussed this before, right? The idea of the juvenile justice system is rehabilitation, right? That's typically what the primary goal is. We want to take these individuals of a tender age, and we want to ensure that these individuals, you know, have a chance to turn their life around, if possible, right? The problem is that when we're dealing with individuals who are, you know, repeat offenders, I mean, nobody wants to admit that this 13, 14-year-old can't be saved, right? Nobody wants to throw up their hands and say, rehabilitation isn't working. This kid has gone down a path and we don't know how to get him back. But that doesn't change the fact that there are 13, 14, 15-year-olds with lengthy, violent criminal histories. And the juvenile justice system simply isn't equipped to deal with those individuals. But even before you get to the recidivism aspect of this, there are juveniles who are committing very serious crimes. And again, the consequences are not serious at all. Ran across a story, I talked about it last year on Cam and Company. I think there were 4 or 5 juveniles in New York State. Stole a car, rammed it into a gun store, stole a bunch of firearms. At least 2 of those individuals, when they were arrested, were simply released to the custody of their parents and told, you know, show up in court at some point at a later date. The others spent, you know, a very short amount of time in juvenile detention before they too were released. And when the time comes for them to go to trial, again, the vast majority of these cases are resolved via a plea deal, which all too often results in a slap on the wrist. And Senator Brantley's right. The message that these juveniles receive is that there are no consequences, no negative consequences, when you commit a serious violent offense. Senator Brantley goes on to say, yet instead of confronting that breakdown, the policy conversation drifts towards symbolic targets. The object, the industry, the lawful business owner. More regulation, more restrictions, more pressure on those who are already complying with the law, while the individuals committing violence remain the least constrained part of the system. She adds that public safety will not improve through scapegoating. It improves when violent behavior carries real consequences, when loopholes are closed, when the system intervenes before the next tragedy instead of explaining it afterwards. And she says, here's the simplest test of any public safety proposal. Does it restrain criminals, or does it burden the law-abiding? And she writes, Democrats keep missing that test, and until accountability replaces deflection, New Mexicans will continue to pay the price. That test, by the way, I think can be applied, you know, not only to Democrats in New Mexico, but really to public policy proposals nationwide, and even at the federal level. I wrote yesterday at Bearing Arms about the Department of Justice's amicus brief siding with the plaintiffs in Rody versus Bonner. That's the challenge to the DOJ's, California's background check scheme for ammunition purchases. And the DOJ brief argues that this law is unconstitutional for a variety of reasons, but most simply and most basically because it is a law that is not meant to advance a legitimate public safety interest. That it is a law that is meant to frustrate the exercise of a fundamental civil right. The right to keep and bear arms. And the brief lays out a number of arguments in support of that premise. But I think the most compelling that the DOJ made is that in, I believe it was 2023, California's ammunition background checks stopped prohibited persons from purchasing ammunition 141 times, which was, I think, 0.03% of all of the background checks that were conducted. Meanwhile, 11% of those checks, north of or right around 60,000 checks, blocked lawful gun owners from purchasing ammunition, because they were misidentified as prohibited persons. So California says, well, I mean, the law is designed to stop, you know, prohibited persons from getting a hold of ammunition. But in practice, it's stopping lawful gun owners from purchasing ammunition far more often than it's stopping violent criminals, right? Whether or not the Ninth Circuit en banc agrees with the DOJ's position that shows that the intent of the law was not to stop violent criminals, but instead to punish lawful gun owners and to chill the exercise of their Second Amendment rights. I mean, honestly, I don't expect the en banc panel to go along with that premise. But I think the DOJ is right in making that assertion. And it goes back to what the senator is talking about here. When you've got laws that are supposedly about public safety, and yet they target people who aren't, by and large, committing violent crimes, that's a sign that it's not about public safety at all, right? When you've got laws that are trying to regulate or restrict or prohibit things that are legal today, possessing a magazine that could hold more than 10 rounds, possessing some of the most popular rifles in the country, again, is that about public safety? Or is that really about curbing the exercise of a fundamental civil right? And when those laws that are aimed at creating new possessory crimes are coupled with bills and legislation that reduce the penalties for violent crimes, make it easier for violent criminals to get out of prison early, again, it becomes even more apparent that the goal here isn't to crack down on violent criminals, But the goal is rather to crack down on those of us who are exercising our Second Amendment rights and those of us who are advocating for our Second Amendment rights as well. So a great column, again, by the senator there, Senator Crystal Brantley. Love to get her on the program. I'll actually reach out to her office and see if we can get her on the show. But did want to bring that to your attention. And again, you know, as we head into the 2026 legislative session, there's going to be no shortage of measures like the ones that Senator Brantley talking about, aimed ostensibly aimed at public safety, but in reality aimed at your right to keep and bear arms. All right, on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Michigan. Actually, before we do that, let's actually get to this for just a second. From city streets to mountain trails, your gear should go wherever life takes you. And that is why at Modern Rugged Leather, every bag is handcrafted from premium, responsibly sourced leather, designed to look sharp, last long, and tell a story of its own. This is my Modern Rugged Leather bag. It has been with me on one road trip so far. I'm looking forward to taking it with me all over the place in 2026. Each stitch, each buckle, each strap reflects timeless craftsmanship and is backed by a lifetime warranty, because quality shouldn't quit when the adventure begins. So whether it's the boardroom or the back roads, Modern Rugged Leather helps you carry confidence every step of the way. Modern Rugged Leather, modern style, timeless durability, backed for life. Life takes you places. Make sure your gear keeps up. Shop the full collection and find yours today at modernrugged.com. Again, that is modernrugged.com. All right, now on to today's good deed of the day, our armed citizen story and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Michigan, where a judge has dismissed charges in a 2024 shooting because prosecutors took too long to bring the case to trial. We've talked about this before. It happens more often than you'd like to think. And sadly, it happened in this case in Bay City, Michigan. 39-year-old Johnny McKinley Jr. had been in the Bay County Jail since his arrest on September 7th of 2024, charged with assault with intent to do great bodily harm, carrying a weapon with unlawful intent, assault with a dangerous weapon, carrying a concealed weapon, and three counts of second offense felony firearm. His trial was scheduled to begin Tuesday, January the 6th. And his defense attorney filed a motion seeking the case's dismissal with prejudice on the grounds that his client's rights to a speedy trial had been violated. The prosecution, meanwhile, filed a motion to adjourn the trial to a later date, arguing that an essential witness was unavailable because they were in Florida at a medical rehab facility. Bay County Prosecutor Michael Kanizuski said that the alleged victim in this case had ceased cooperating with the prosecution as well, which further affected their case. This was the third time that the prosecution had offered a motion to adjourn the trial, to extend the trial, essentially, right? Monday, the two parties showed up in front of a judge. At that point, McKinley had been jailed for 485 days awaiting trial, well over a year. And the judge said, no, I'm not going to continue this case any further. At which point the prosecution sought to dismiss the case without prejudice, meaning that they could refile charges. The judge granted that request. So the case against McKinley was dismissed, but prosecutors could still refile charges at some point in the future, at least until the statute of limitations runs out. Meanwhile, McKinley did not get out of jail. No. According to MLive.com, he was transferred to the Saginaw County Jail on a probation violation. A Saginaw County judge in January of 2024 sentenced him to 3 years after convictions of felon in possession of a firearm and carrying a concealed weapon. Now, so already this case is kind of interesting to me. But it gets even worse. Because not only was this guy in jail for 485 days while prosecutors tried to get all of their ducks in a row, bring this case to trial. And by the way, as a supporter of all of our enumerated rights, yes, the right to a speedy trial is important too. You can't just let people languish in jail for months or years at a time without being able to actually defend themselves in court, right? So I don't actually have a problem with the judge's decision. If anything, I think the judge probably should have dismissed this case with prejudice, meaning that prosecutors could not refile these charges. But again, in January of 2024, Mr. McKinley was sentenced to 3 years in prison for violating the terms of his probation. In January of 2024. And yet, on September 7th of 2024, McKinley was already out of jail after being sentenced to 3 years. 9 months later, he's out and is allegedly in this parking lot of a Dusso's bar where officers arrived to find a large crowd standing around a 37-year-old man on the pavement with a gunshot wound to his lower left abdomen. Officers and firefighters rendered aid to the semi-conscious man before he was taken to a local hospital there in Saginaw. Police recovered three spent 9mm shell casings about 30 feet from where the man had been lying. Short time later, they found three more casings near a nearby intersection. Police gave, witnesses gave different accounts to the police, but all of them generally agreed that a fight had been going on before gunshots happened. They said that we heard between 6 and 12 gunshots. I'm just questioning how on earth here this individual, Mr. McKinley, got a 3-year sentence for violating his probation. Then 9 months later, he's out on the streets, and then he's picked up and charged with this crime. He sits in jail for 485 days before the judge says, "This is ridiculous. I'm dismissing the charges." And then he goes back to jail for that probation violation. How does that even work? Am I all that upset that a individual accused of a violent crime is still behind bars? I mean, on the one hand, not really. But on the other hand, how does that happen? He had already been released from his probationary sentence back in 2024. He's not been convicted of any other crime since then. In fact, the charge that he was facing has now been dismissed. So why is he back in jail? I don't really get it. It is very confusing to me. But bottom line is, if he had actually served that 3-year sentence back in 2024, he couldn't have been accused of this crime because he would have been in prison instead of out on the street. All right, on to today's armed citizen story from New York State, where police say a shooting appears to be justified under New York law. This was in Rochester, I believe, shooting over the weekend on Saturday, January 3rd. When police arrived to this home, they found three individuals who were wounded. 49-year-old man had a gunshot wound to his upper body, 69-year-old man with a cut to the upper body, and a 22-year-old man with a cut to his forearm. Rochester Police Department Captain Greg Bellows said the incident stemmed from an argument among family members, but he said a preliminary investigation suggested the 69-year-old fired a legally owned rifle to protect himself and the 22-year-old from harm, I guess, by the 41-year-old who was found with the gunshot wound to the upper body. At this point, all indications are this was a case of self-defense. We don't have a lot of details. None of these three individuals have been identified. We don't know what charges the 41-year-old will face, but it appears that the 69-year-old acting in defense of himself and that 22-year-old will not be facing any charges at all in New York State. And finally today, our good deed of the day in the right place at the right time, we're able to do the right thing. Some neighbors in Baltimore County who helped rescue a family from a house fire. Unfortunately, the family pets did not make it out of the house, but an adult and two kids did. This was in the Middle River area of Baltimore County. Officials called out Tuesday morning about 7 o'clock, found flames coming from the front of the home as well as smoke from the second floor. Took firefighters about 20 minutes to contain the blaze. But before firefighters even got on the scene, neighbors had helped get that family out of the home. Baltimore County Fire Chief Joseph Dixon said in a news release, neighbors acted without hesitation to help a mother and her children escape a dangerous situation and thanked the residents, quote, for their courage and selflessness and commending their crews for the swift response and extinguishing the fire and providing medical support. Stephen Angelini was one of those who helped catch the two kids who were basically dropped out of the second floor window by their mom. He said his immediate reaction was to get out and help. He suffered an arm injury recently, but he tried to get a ladder. He couldn't do so. So instead, he shifted his focus on saving the kids As the smoke grew thicker, the fire grew larger, he said, my second reaction was to just get these kids down and save their lives. And I told their mom just to drop them, I'll catch them. Children safely caught. Neighbors managed to get the ladder that Angelini was trying to get off of a truck. They were able to do so. They were able to place it up against the side of the home, allowing mom to climb down. Angelini said, you know, all three of them, when they came down, black soot all over them. It was horrific. Said it was devastating and was glad that they were alive at the end of the day. Nothing else matters. Life matters. The family has been displaced from their home. The local Red Cross is assisting there. But again, as difficult as it might be, and I'm not trying to minimize what happens when, you know, you lose everything in a house fire. As difficult as it can be to put your life back together, you still have a life, right? And as important as that stuff might be, not nearly as important as the lives of those two kids and the adult in the home, all of whom were saved, again, thanks to the quick thinking and the fast action of their neighbors there in the Middle River, Maryland. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. And I do want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. I'm looking forward to being back with you again tomorrow. But be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day as we're keeping you up to date on all of the latest segment news and information from all across the nation. And if you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. Just use the promo code FIGHT and get 60% off your VIP membership. You get all kinds of great... what's the word I'm looking for here? Great advantages. A lot of great things for every tier of support. But no matter which one you choose, the benefits that are provided at every tier will go to support the work that we're doing here at Bearing Arms. We greatly appreciate that support. All right. Have a great rest of your Hump Day Wednesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow. I am desperately going to sneeze the sneeze that I've been holding in for the past couple of minutes. And until we talk again, be well. Be safe and be free.